Welcome to Rethink, a podcast focused on the future of skilled nursing. I'm Zahida Siddiqui, editor with Skilled Nursing News. Today, I'm excited to have Derek Prince with us. Derek is the president and CEO of HMG Healthcare, which oversees 37 post-acute care facilities across Texas and Kansas. He's been a board member of the Texas Healthcare Association since 2005 and is deeply involved in lobbying efforts with the Texas legislature. Derek is also a vocal critic of the federal government's minimum staffing mandate and is one of the Texas operators leading the American Healthcare Association's lawsuit against federal agencies to get that rule dismissed. Before we get to my conversation with Derek, I'd like to highlight the Rethink Conference taking place on September 11th and 12th in Chicago, Illinois. This premier skilled nursing event brings executives together to address trends, challenges, and the future of the nursing home industry. Join skilled nursing therapy health system post-acute care executives, investors and professionals, as well as vendors, developers, and consultants for a one-of-a-kind event. Visit skillnursingnews.com/events to find out more. And now, my conversation with Derek Prince. Hi, Derek. Let's start with the big news. The American Healthcare Association filed a lawsuit against federal agencies seeking to dismiss the federal government's staffing mandate. The Texas Healthcare Association and your organization are named as plaintiffs. How did this come about, and why is Texas a good place to stage this fight against mandatory staffing ratios?
Well, thank you for having me. When we talk about the staffing mandate and more particular about the state of Texas, unfortunately, our facilities have been woefully underfunded in the state for quite some time. And when you have funding issues, those are obviously going to lead to staffing issues. And when you look at the staffing numbers across the country, Texas ranks very, very low when it comes to overall staffing. And really, it's because there's not enough funding to do that. And even I will say with that, though, the quality that Texas provides, given the amount of resources it's done, quite honestly, is to be commended. But you can't have great staffing numbers without the funding. When we get into the mandate specifically, when you look at the initial analysis that American Healthcare Association's done, 2/3 of all the facilities in Texas do not meet the requirement. When you couple that with the number of clinicians that would be needed to hit this mandate, I think we're somewhere in the range of 9,000 CNAs, just below 4,000 RNs. It's untenable. You're not going to be able to do that. None of our facilities are going to be able to make that. And so when you're not able to do that, when you don't have the staff to take care of the population, you know, contrary to popular belief, the facilities don't just bring people in and don't put staff there. We end up having to close wings, units, and in the ultimate situation, we have to close facilities. So in the very end with this mandate, basically it comes down to it's an unfunded mandate that basically is going to shut down facilities across the country, specifically in Texas, and it's going to disrupt the healthcare continuum and quite honestly make it more difficult for the elder folks across the country and in Texas to find care.
Mm-hmm. Turning to your organization, can you reflect on HMG Healthcare's year so far and describe one win that you and your team have achieved?
Sure. I think when we look at HMG specifically, it's been a pretty exciting year for us starting off. I think the biggest accomplishment that I would say is really not one win, but really more two. We've had two deficiency-free surveys to start this year off in a climate of regulatory instability. So our clinical and our operations team have done a phenomenal job in being able to achieve two deficiency-free surveys.
Hmm, wonderful. And can you describe one big challenge that HMG has faced over the last several months?
Sure. I think our biggest challenge really comes in on our collection side and more specifically with the Medicaid recertification. Generally speaking, Medicaid collections have not been an issue for most providers. But unfortunately, when Medicaid expanded during COVID and the CARES Act, The role's obviously inflated. And so to rein that back in, the state and really everyone had to go back in and audit the Medicaid roles to make sure that the appropriate people were receiving the appropriate benefits. And that is certainly understandable. Unfortunately, though, the state of Texas, when you take all of our Medicaid eligible recipients in skilled nursing facilities and you couple them with the other folks that are out in the general population and have to run every one of them through a recertification process, the state just doesn't have the capability to process that many applications. And unfortunately, that led into delay in cash payments. It puts a pretty severe burden on the facilities and making sure that they have the cash flow to meet that. And so that was certainly the biggest thing that HMG has experienced from a challenge standpoint. And quite honestly, from what I'm told, a lot of my peers and other providers in the state are experiencing the same issue.
Mm-hmm. And possibly goes beyond the borders of Texas, I'm sure.
Yeah, I agree.
And then now looking ahead to 2024, what are your top priorities and goals as CEO?
You know, this is going to sound very, very cliche, but the top priority is always to take care of people. And when I say that, it sounds like I'm painting with a rather broad brush, but you walk into my office and there's a big neon sign and it says, take care of people. And when I say take care of people, obviously we're talking about our patient population, but more importantly, we're talking about our team members. And, you know, we talk about staffing mandate, we talk about compressed labor markets across the country. And so the biggest priority that I keep looking at is what do we continue to do to affect our labor situation? And so we're basically coming in and sharpening our pencils on all the different things from our onboarding process, ease of onboarding, different training components, the continuing education units. The big priorities for me going through the rest of 2024 are going to be team member focused.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this is a good segue into my next question, which is what are staffing pressures like across the sector?
Yeah, I think if you look at everywhere, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're in healthcare, if you're in retail, energy, all sectors across the country. I think everyone is understanding that the labor market is certainly compressed. And when you get into healthcare and even drill that down even further into long-term care, we just don't have the number of people that's required to take care of the population that we're doing. And so we're in a situation where there is a really, really high demand and a really, really low supply. And so we're all fighting for the same individuals.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that staffing pressures eased in the first half of 2024?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say eased. I think that we're seeing a few more individuals enter the labor market and enter the healthcare profession. So maybe to a very, very small degree, but it's still it is the number one problem that I think about every day.
Yeah. And in the earlier question you answered, you touched upon focusing on team members. Are there any workforce-related initiatives that HMG Healthcare has undertaken specifically to improve recruitment and retention? And if so, can you describe them?
Sure. I think the biggest one that I would address is HMGU. Going back to 2012, one of the things that I really wanted to initiate was hopefully to have HMG to have its own educational department and really hopefully be able to have our own learning institution to where we would have our own campus and be able to put people through the classes and actually get them into the workforce specifically on CNAs, LVNs, RNs, and then ultimately our administrators. And so that was a goal going all the way back to 2012. Unfortunately, I was somewhat naive and did not realize all the work that it would go into and all the regulatory requirements that we were going to have to encounter moving forward. And so, we ended up not going into the thing where we have our own university, actually, but we couple with 13 other educational institutions. We brought on an individual, Rick Cochran, our VP of Special Projects, and he runs HMGU. And so right now, we've got 57 students that we are extremely proud of and that are going through various educational programs. The majority of those are CNAs going to the LVN program, with some of our LVNs going into RN and BSN programs. And so we're really, really excited about that. We've got another 35 applicants that are going through. And I know a lot of folks have tuition reimbursement plans, things of that nature. And this is a little bit different to where we have actually have counselors that work with you. We're making sure that your schedules line up with the educational requirements. There's no out of pocket. All of the bills come to HMGU, and those are funded through that. It's a not for profit LLC that's on the that is distinct from HMG. And so we're really excited about what we've been able to pull off, and we hope to continue to grow that program.
Yeah, that sounds like a really excellent program. Just shifting away from staffing, we've heard a lot about, you know, a lot of concern really about the rise of Medicare Advantage as a payer for nursing homes, including operational pain from increased paperwork, audits, appeals, etc. Is HMG Healthcare feeling this pain? And if so, how is the organization responding?
Sure. Well, when you look at HMG's overall skill mix as a whole, 70% of that population for us is in a managed care, Medicare Advantage program. And so, yes, we certainly feel that pain. The majority of issues, you hit the nail on the head. It is increased paperwork. It's increased supervision. It's all of the above. And so we have to do a much better job at crossing the T's and dotting our I's as we move forward. And so we've had to take a really, really hard look at what are our systems and our operating procedures to make sure that occurs. And so as we go through that, our biggest challenge was on the collection side. And unfortunately, for a while, we were operating in really more of a silo and allowing our central billing office to take on that burden just all by themselves. And so we put different processes in place. I mean, it seems very simplistic when you go back to it, but it goes all the way from our admission process, obviously through our MDS coordinators and our reimbursement nurses, follow through with our business office managers, and then ultimately with our billing team at the central billing office. And we've had to really fine tune that. And we've got some strong leaders now in our CBO and at the facility level to help us do that. But it's certainly a challenge on making sure that you are getting compensated for the care that you provide.
Mm-hmm. And turning to the issue of surveys, how have surveys been going for HMG? And we've been reporting on ongoing concerns over survey processes, including, you know, delays. Is that situation still the same or alleviated in Texas at all?
Well, our surveys, as I mentioned earlier, I think some of our larger accomplishments are two deficiency-free surveys that we got earlier this year. But I will say, over the course of the last 18 months, it has been an extremely challenging environment, specifically in Texas. There's been some rearrangement of the survey team and enforcement, and some realignment of that. With enforcement taking on different responsibilities, basically on an island of itself. And that's not just for the long-term care part of our Medicaid program, but basically any Medicaid program with adult protective services, with CHIP, child services, all of those things. So enforcement it was such a different change here in Texas. And so with that being said, things got a little bit turned on their ear. We experienced much higher immediate jeopardies in the last 18 months. We experienced much higher civil monetary penalties across the board. And so we're in the process now of working with the state agency, going through the data and saying, what's going on here? And the state, specifically on the survey side, Michelle Dionvalik, she's really phenomenal. She's trying to work with us and put stuff together and putting some training together to make sure that everybody is aligned and understanding what's going on. So yes, your reporting is accurate. It's been a challenging environment from an HMG standpoint. I think it's moving a little bit better. I can't really speak to that in the rest of the state, but I do acknowledge that the people at the state, specifically on the survey side, are looking at stuff and trying to get everybody educated on making it a smoother process.
Mm-hmm. Great. And are there any metrics that you can share related to how HMG has been able to bring down systemic healthcare costs, reduced hospitalizations, et cetera?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic. When we bought the company back in 2012, I was adamant with my two partners. I was like, we've got to get on board with that. We've got to start seeing, do better with value-based payments. And where I was really coming from was two areas, our length of stay and our recidivism rates. And we were really focused on looking at our length of stay and the Medicare spend per beneficiary and trying to become a value add for our acute care partners at the hospitals. We went and pitched that. I talked to a lot of the CFOs at our acute care facilities that we do business with. And unfortunately, we were a little bit ahead of the curve. And quite honestly, I almost single-handedly bankrupted our organization because we went from having a length of stay north of between 30 and 35 days and dropped that to a length of stay below 15, which was good from a value proposition. We were getting quality outcomes. But when you look at that from a business model, if you're not seeing the volume pick up on the other side, that puts you in some precarious situations. So those metrics are still in play. The good news on that side of it, I mentioned before, 70% of our skill mix moving forward has been from the Medicare Advantage plans. And because we put systems in place to be more effective and monitor those things early on, our managed care partners were able to see that, took advantage of that. And so we've got some strong relationships with those organizations.
And then this next question might be a little redundant, but perhaps not. But can you describe any value-based care initiatives currently being pursued by HMG Healthcare?
Sure. Well, we work with our team, Ron McGoy, Anna Pico, and their team in our strategy and network development department. They work with various accountable care organizations. We're working with following our patient population through the healthcare continuum. And we're always trying to partner with organizations that strive for quality and allow us to participate in the shared savings. I think our biggest shared savings is on, we're an active provider and a provider-owned I-SNP, where we're continuing, the basis for the I-SNP is proactive care. That'll help sustain quality outcomes and reduce the hospitalization. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, this podcast is called Rethink. What's something that you think leaders in the nursing home SNF sector need to quote unquote rethink? This could be anything, a common operational practice, a common mindset, a business strategy, how advocacy is being done, anything at all?
Sure. I think I alluded to it a little bit earlier. I think everyone is going to say that we always need to take care of people and we need to take care of the patients. We need to deliver quality care. And I don't mean to say that I don't believe in that. I certainly do. But where I think we need to rethink is, what are we doing to take care of our team members, of the people that are taking care of the populations that we serve? What are we putting in place to make our profession, our facilities, our companies a more desirable place to be able to recruit the people to our profession, to our field, and so they can understand, what they're able to deliver and by doing that, the lives that they're able to impact. And then once we're able to recruit them to our teams and to our profession, what do we have in the way of, whether it's benefits, whether it's in the way of foundations to help out during trying times, simple things, we talk about HMGU, educational benefits, all of those different things. I think everyone needs to really sit back and rethink how they are taking care of their team members. Because if we don't have those team members, it's going to be awfully hard to take care of people in general.
Thank you. It's been a true pleasure talking to you today. Really appreciate your presence here. Thank you so much, Derek.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
that does it for this episode of Rethink. I'd like to remind listeners that our Rethink conference is taking place on September 11th and 12th in Chicago, Illinois. This premier skilled nursing event brings executives together to address trends, challenges, and the future of the nursing home industry. Join skilled nursing, therapy, health system, post-acute care executives, investors, and professionals, as well as vendors, developers, and consultants for a one-of-a-kind event. Visit skillednursingnews.com/events to learn more. Until next time, thanks for listening.